Hello and welcome to this episode of the Think Different podcast. Our guest today is Anne Hoyer. She is an entrepreneur and IoT expert from Denmark. In today's episode, we are going to talk about Industry 4.0, IoT and its prerequisites, as well as the future of these smart devices. To round it up, we are going to talk about Anne's personal experience of becoming an entrepreneur 1.5 years ago. Enjoy. Hello, Anne. Thank you so much for joining us today. To start with, can you give us a quick introduction about yourself, your professional career so far, and perhaps also your connection to Mannheim, the one you had in the past?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Simon. And thank you for inviting me to this podcast. Very happy to be part of it. So my name is Anne. I've been in the tech space for not that long, actually. I've been here for about 6 years. I had a previous career, which is always turned out to be quite a good thing because I have a different perspective. But in the tech space, I've been for about 6 years. I started my career at SAP, which of course you know as a big German company, the largest software company in Europe as well. I was from the beginning very lucky to be part of some very exciting projects. I was first in sales, but got a hint from a company, which is a subsidiary of Volkswagen Group, that they were looking to do something with their machines, the engines from MAN on ships, but it was something with data, but they didn't really know what it was. We didn't know what to call it. It turned out after a while that this was actually IoT. At this point, SAP hadn't launched any IoT products yet. So this was the pure beginning. So even though I've been in tech for 6 years, it's about the same time that SAP had IoT projects, which of course is the topic we're talking about here today. So I was at SAP for about 3 years, having multiple roles, working both in the Nordics and then later on more globally out of headquarters. Not in Mannheim, but in Waldorf, which is very close to Mannheim. Sitting in the headquarters, working all over the world with IoT, and been very lucky to be part of these projects, working inside the development organization, but being the eyes outside of the IoT world, IoT products, and also leading the information back in. So I would travel around the world and talk with everything from executives, board members, to developers, to business-oriented people, visiting sites, visiting base stations, understanding productions, products in use for IoT, leading this information back to SAP, but also so they know how they could develop the products, but also how to position the products of IoT. This then got me to get a position in France at a consulting company. So now I was on the software product side and I moved to the consulting side in order to build out in Southern Europe this field of IoT, Industry 4.0, predictive maintenance, and so on. I did that for a while. And then at some point, I think we're going to cover this a little bit later on, I decided to quit the corporate world and start my own company, focusing, of course, on technology. So that was more my professional career. Very quickly before this, I had a career in marketing, in media, sitting with what we used to call video on demand platforms, which are now just, you know, streaming the Netflix, trying to figure out how to put a monetary value on data back then. Didn't know what to call it, was just streaming or video on demand, but basically working in that field. Now I'm Danish, just to do some very personal stuff. I'm Danish. I had my degree from Denmark and a few years in Scotland. And then, of course, working between Denmark and France as well. Now due to Corona, I'm basically mostly in Denmark, in Copenhagen, but go quite often to Paris when possible. I do my company, I do some board work, advisory roles, ambassador roles, and everything that's part of this whole technology-based ecosystem. So I used to live in Mannheim for a short time. When I worked at SAP, I used first in Waldorf, and then I lived in Mannheim would spend a lot of time on the train to the airport, though. But I do know the city, and I do like the city. Great coffee.
Okay. Yeah, we indeed are going to cover your entrepreneurial journey in the end today. But before we are going to that topic, we would like to start with the definition of IoT, because we always like to start with, okay, what is the topic actually about we are going to talk today? And so could you give us a quick overview of what Industry 4.0 is, what can be understood when talking about IoT, and perhaps also the requisites of this interconnected environment?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So just a little bit of storytelling, and I'm not going to spend too much time on that because you can, you know, look that up online as well. But Industry 4.0 is, interestingly enough, coined as a term in Germany. So industry with a Y is the global word, but it actually comes mainly from the German government and pronounced Industry 4.0. It's the fourth industrial revolution. So the first one was around late 1700s. It was hand to machine. So when we used to work with our hands, suddenly we would have machines. We're not talking about machine with electricity, but it could be, for example, producing fabric would be done by hand. Suddenly you would have a machine made out of wood that would help you do that a lot faster. And just as we see today that people are not always confident with machines taking over. Nowadays we think that it's, you know, it's a joke if you see a machine doing a job of someone that can do this by hand. It's not really a threat, but it was back then in the late 1700s. So you would have exactly this this example of creating fabric and garments suddenly from people's hands into wooden looms, and this would spark a great rage in the society. This was the first industrial revolution. The second one was about 100 years later, which was the second industrial revolution. And this was more when we got railroads and telegraphs, and just we started to move faster in our communication and our transportation. The third one was the third industrial revolution, but also the digital revolution. This is where we got computers. So everything became a little more computerized. This was the 20th century. And now here we have the Industrial Revolution, which is the German term, or the fourth industrial revolution, the Industry 4.0. And this is where we are going from digitizing to digitalizing. The difference here is, I'm not sure if you understand the difference here, but it's always a little bit of confusing. Digitizing is when you put numbers on things, basically when you can extract data from things. Digitalizing is when you can use that data for something. But this is where we are now in the Industry 4.0. And it was coined in Germany as part of a government push to help industrialize the manufacturing sector, to be sure that you could start automating, create greater volumes, have more personalization in the industry. So that was on Industry 4.0. For IoT, this is part of Industry 4.0. This is the tool that is part of it. And IoT is basically you almost said it before, Simon, the connectedness of physical objects, things, Internet of Things. So one physical object talks to another physical object. They don't have to say a lot of smart things as long as they're connected through internet connectivity. There's been a little bit of dispute on who actually coined that term. I've heard different things. The earliest source I found was in 1999 by a guy that was working at Procter & Gamble. And since then, few people have said that they've come up with this term, but it doesn't really matter. The interesting thing is that it's been around for quite some time. And what I find interesting is that the past, 5 years, there's been a lot of talk. There's been a lot of predictions on IoT. What is IoT? Where are we going to go? You probably know research companies such as Gartner, IDC, and they all have these predictions that by 2025, there's going to be X amount of connected devices, IoT projects, and so on. Because this is still so new, even though the term is from 1999, even though it's still so new that they can't really predict. So Gartner predicted that by 2019, there would be more than 14 billion projects. Now, last year, there were 10 billion projects. So it's very difficult to see where we're actually going. But what I think is interesting is that very few of these IoT projects, they haven't scaled. So there's a lot of POCs out there. There's a lot of the technology works, but there's not a lot of then what happens when we scale it. And I think this is the next phase we're going to see when it comes to IoT. I can talk a little bit more about IoT, or we can move on to the next topic.
Yeah, actually, I do have a follow-up question on that.
Yes.
So you said there are a lot of POCs at the moment, mm-hmm. but what would you say are the most recent developments or the developments you are most excited about for the future or up to today?
So I'm probably going to give you a little bit of a boring answer on this one, because the fun answer would be some kind of cool technology that would solve a big, you know, issue in the world. But I actually don't think that that's the most exciting thing at the moment. I think the most exciting thing is that the industry, the ecosystems around IoT, Industry 4.0, understand that it's not a lonely company's game. It's not about my product fixes everything in the world. It's about working together. It's about understanding your ecosystem. And it's about going a little bit back to basic. It's about breaking down silos. We talk about breaking down silos in corporations. We should do that in technology as well. We cannot have a technology called only, you know, I'm saying my former employer, and it's not anything bad against them, but it's not only SAP. It cannot only be Microsoft, only be any of the other industry players. They all have to work together because they're all pieces of the same puzzle. And this is what I think we're starting to see. Scaled down, a little bit of taking the hype away, just making it work, making it scalable, making it agile, and making it agnostic. This is what I'm starting to see now. And this means that we can start scaling these projects. And I think that's exciting. It's a shift of mindset.
Okay, yeah, totally makes sense. I mean, it has to be accessible.
Yes.
Okay, now I would continue. Maybe to preface the next question with a simpler one, on a smaller scale maybe. Do you think that more people should use smart devices? And do you use smart devices yourself on a day-to-day basis? Is there a risk for the consumer when they provide their data for collection? I mean, we don't know in the end where our data ends up and how secure everything is and how long it is going to be stored.
Okay. So three different questions there. So when you say people, you're referring to end consumers, right?
Right, right.
Just people like you and me, not the consumers, anything. Yeah. I think that people should not know that they use smart devices. It has to be seamless, integrated into their everyday life. We shouldn't adapt to technology. Technology should adapt to us. When it makes sense for us to use them, we use them. People in elder care, makes sense for them to wear a device that can monitor in case something happens. This is logic. They shouldn't be forced to do it, but it makes sense. The technology that we use them because we want to. You might have a smartphone, you might have an Apple Watch. Me in my home, I have a few things that I find, you know, are helping me my everyday. I have an Alexa. I have a robot vacuum cleaner that I can control with my Alexa, but it's not for the sake of the technology. It makes sense. So I think that it's good that people use technology, because using the technology is also helping us to advance technology, make it better. Both the technology as is, but also the algorithms that the technology is using for the greater good. But no one can force us to do it. And it has to be the software, the technology that adapts to us and not the other way around. I think the second question was about my use of the smart devices.
second question was if there is a risk for the consumer to provide their data for collection.
I think it depends. So I've been working different parts of the world, and there's a very different perspective on this depending on where you are. So mainly I would say in Europe, there's nothing to worry about, not at this stage. There's so many regulations going on. There are so many initiatives going on from governments, but also from the European Commission. So first of all, there is, of course, we all know about GDPR, about data collection, personal data collection. This was overdue and created a lot of confusion because we didn't know, right? We didn't know that the data we started to collect could actually be used and so on. So they became, there are regulations on it now. And people trust it. This is very important that people trust that when they use a piece of hardware, software, some smart device, they know that they're giving away data and this data is used for good purposes and they're not linked to you as a person. North America, it's a little more open. I think in Europe, it's very, very safe with your data. In North America, it's a little less. I think it could be something as well with how they understand. It's almost like a barter agreement. I give you data, you give me service, no money involved. And they're more inclined to do that as well. Then other parts of the world, I know that there are less restrictions, but I know that they're coming as well. I don't think people should be afraid. I think with the regulations in place, with the governments, the European Commission as well, communicating how this data is being used and utilized, having you know, open, free, everything, everybody having giving consent, taking away consent if they don't want to share their data anymore. People should understand this, be aware. If they do that, they will be more inclined to actually use the technology, use the giveaway their data, which is not linked to themselves. And this is crucial to actually progress as well. But we have to do it in this controlled way.
I definitely agree with you that we use technology for our own benefit and we don't really see what's going on behind the scenes. And to be frank, I don't really care as well. I think, like you said, Europe is pretty safe with when it comes to data collection and security. Now, taking it a step further, maybe looking at Asia and China especially, you might have heard of their current CCTV technology, Skynet, mm-hmm. With them tracking their citizens, their faces, collecting data on their behavior, whereabouts, and more that they won't talk about. Where do you think one should draw the line between this benefits our society and this infringes our society's privacy and security altogether? Shouldn't certain data be off limits for the government? Wouldn't it be too centralized of a power, I guess, AI and smart technology for the government?
So I'm not an expert on Asia. So I don't really, but in general terms, it's about transparency, it's about trust, and it's about giving people the option to learn, educate at all different levels. Of course, there are the grandparents' age of people, they might not understand this, which is understandable. Then there are all the young generations, they understand data in a different way. But it's about educating because they grew up with it and older people didn't grow up with it. So educating people, transparency, and trust is the most important thing. Then what data you're collecting, I think, depends on the purpose of it. Collecting data for people's health, safety can be okay if everybody's understood and agreed with this. But if the things are hidden, if the truth is not being told, of course, it's never okay.
The next question would be, where do you see the most changes within different industries that are subject to the biggest change concerning incorporating Industry 4.0, smart tech, and so on? So the second question would be, do you also think that Industry 4.0 and Internet of Things could become a major role in companies' sustainability concepts?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So first of all, I would say that the biggest changes are on the industrial level. So as we said before, consumers will adopt the technology if it makes sense to them. But they probably won't notice a lot of it. So on the industry side, the companies will adopt the technology if it increases the profit margin. It's about creating new services, new products. It's about basically about making more money in your company. Then they will use this technology. But this is also some of the benefits of technology. You can sort of predict when things are going to break. You know what is going to break at one point, so you can optimize. It's not about understanding if it breaks or not. It's about optimizing the route until repair, making sure that you have zero downtime and so on. So in that industry, in the manufacturing part, is also why it was coined in Germany as Industry 4.0 for manufacturing. It makes sense here. Then there's the logistics part as well, getting the goods. So here it affects the consumers as well. My favorite snack is ensured to be in stock at my store because of the optimization of the route, the warehouse, and so on. I don't see this as a consumer. It does affect my everyday, but I have no idea, right? So I think this is the biggest change where it can increase the profit margin. It sounds very cold and capitalistic, I know, but we just know what drives the world. Second, when it comes to green technology, absolutely using or green transition technology is a massive factor. Again, we do know, and it's not to be negative, but there has to be some sort of financial gain in it as well. These two can be combined, definitely. And I think the companies, the governments, the initiatives that manages to combine this are the ones that are going to win, because we do need to make a change, but we also do need to cater to everything. Unfortunately, not everybody in the world is a philanthropist, such as Bill Gates, for example, who does a lot of good for this planet because he can. But when we can combine this, I'm sure that we can increase the positive impact on the planet as well.
Yeah, totally makes sense. So as we've covered now a lot about IoT Industry 4.0, we do want to talk about your new chapter in your professional career. So you know that our initiative is there to encourage people to start their own business, to support them starting their own business, to provide them the right tools to do so. And therefore, it's always really interesting to hear what others experienced when doing so. So to begin with, what is the purpose of your company, and how did you realize the issue or the need for the services you are providing to your customers or clients?
The purpose of the company is to represent international mid-sized technology companies in new markets. That's what the company is doing. Now, the way I realized that this was actually a need was that I was working in the ecosystems of emerging technologies, such as IoT. I saw a lot of very smart people. I saw a lot of innovative people. I saw a lot of amazing technology. But these people and this technology didn't really get to sit at the big corporate table. They never really got to get that big voice. And it started to annoy me. I saw this pattern of big corporation ask big consulting company to advise on big technology. And it all stays in this sort of elite layer. And it's not about, being a Robin Hood and just making justice in the world, but you're actually missing out on a lot of good technology. If you have a technology company that can do everything, you can't really do anything. So listening to and using technology from companies that understand the matter, companies that understand the industry. Imagine a company that has been working in agriculture for 150 years. They have knowledge that the big tech companies will never have. So this is technology we need to bring to the table. So first of all, we will grow these companies that have pivoted out of an industry, that have knowledge, people pivoting out of an industry and that has domain knowledge. But we will also help the industry getting further, the overall technology space get further. We will help green transition because we will listen to people that understand the matter. And this is exactly what I saw that there was a need for. So I decided to try to go in and create a system to advocate for these companies. Now, I can't do this myself. I'm one person only. So I decided to build this up as a flexible, scalable structure instead. So at least being, you know, technology-wise trained in Germany, the German mindset of being having everything in processes, making sure they're scalable, having everything close-ended has helped a lot, and is definitely something that I would advise anybody who builds a what they want to be a scalable business to do. Making sure that this system of supporting, in my case, supporting these mid-sized, the industry-focused technology companies scale by creating these kind of frameworks and systems to help them scale out. So I did this and through a way of working, which is catering in general to the ecosystem, understanding KPIs, understanding stakeholders, we managed to scale quite fast and are now representing about 15 companies from 10 different countries around the world.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, congratulations about that. For that. I mean, it's 1.5 years now. So I don't know, roughly January 2020, March 2020, somewhere mm-hmm. around that time. So yeah. You're basically still at the beginning of your journey, I would say, although it's been a while now. But what have been major challenges so far, and how did you approach these to solve them?
I would say some of the biggest challenges, I would say the challenges that I realized are not the challenges I thought I would have. I thought it would be, and it's not to sound cocky, but I thought it would be difficult to get customers, to get clients. That's not really, when you have a good business case, that's not really the most difficult thing. I would say in my point of view, it's to keep focused. What is it exactly that we do? And then really be strict with closing everything else out. Because when you work in ecosystems such as we do, because we do work not just with ourselves, we have a lot of stakeholders and people in our surroundings, such as governments. We work closely with hubs and technology hubs, accelerator programs, larger technology vendors, and so on. Everybody has an opinion, and everybody want to pull the company in different directions. So keeping a clear focus has been some of the most challenging things, I would say.
Okay, so would you say it is really important to have clear vision and, I don't know, vision statement is always a bit too corporate, I would say, but having a clear view on where the company should go in the future, right?
So this is the tricky part, right? Because if you sit down one day and say, I want to start a company, and then you spend, I don't know how long, creating PowerPoint slides, business cases, and you sit alone in your little home, and you don't talk to anybody because you don't want to be disturbed, and everything I just talked about here, you might end up with something that doesn't have a market fit. So what I did, which seemed to be working for me, is that I put everything down on paper that I wanted to do. Because this has to be driven by the person who starts the company. You have to be person involved in this, otherwise it's not fun. So I put down on paper everything I wanted to do, everything I could do, everything I had experience with, and then I clustered them. And then I created very high level business cases in all of them. And then I started talking to people. And don't be afraid that anybody's going to steal your idea, because if someone's going to steal your idea, first of all, there's always room for more if your business case is good. So figure out where there's more attraction. What do people actually want? And start moving that direction. So having business cases, understanding what you as a person want to do, what do you want to change? But don't be too firm on what you have to do, because you have to listen to the market. You have to listen to where is the need. And you have to listen to where is the money. You have to be able to fund the company. You have to be able to fund yourself. You probably have to have food on the table as well. And it's important to go where the money is, but usually money also follows where the need is. So don't be too stuck on what you do. And this is the tricky part, but no one said it was easy to create a business. Being knowing when to shut out all the noise around you, but also knowing when to listen.
Okay, so Would you do it again?
I think I always am going to do it in some kind of way.
Okay.
Now we've already come to the last question, which you sort of already explained. But yeah, with our last question, we always aim to guide our listeners through their professional careers to help them avoid future mistakes. And we want to break the barrier between listener and our guest. So would you be able to directly give some advice to our listeners for young entrepreneurs? Could be advice that you think is most important or something that you wish someone had told you in the past. So what is one indispensable golden tip you have for startup founders and enthusiasts to keep in mind when starting a business for themselves?
I think there's quite a lot, but I think it's important to talk to people. Don't sit with this alone. Find mentors. There's always someone that's willing to help. And this is definitely something I saw in this entrepreneur sort of environment. Everybody's been through it. People are enthusiastic. People are nice. People want to help. Reach out and ask for help. Be critical thinking as well. Believe in what it is that you're doing. Don't fall into someone else's recipe. If you're an entrepreneur, you're probably doing something that no one has done before. How can you do that? By following a recipe that someone else has created. So make sure that you follow your own recipe, but listen to people. Listen to people who've done it before. Associate yourself with people. I think that's very important. Another thing that has proven beneficial for the company, not me as a founder, but for the company, is to understand everybody in your surroundings. So understand all the stakeholders you might meet at some point, understand what drives them, what makes them successful, and then make sure to cater to that. Because that's going to open a lot of different doors, and it's going to help you to not be a threat to everybody you meet. So say those are some of my advice.
I would maybe add another question. Were there times where you thought about giving up or hit a rough patch and didn't know where to go and how to continue doing what you're doing?
Absolutely. 100%. I have to say this summer, I'm taking some time off because it's been a tough 1.5 years working on this, and I need to take a break, which means I'm going on vacation tomorrow. It's not a bigger break than that, but it's definitely really hard, and you can feel very, very, very alone. As a founder, unless you have a co-founder or you're very close with someone, you're very alone, and you're alone in every decision. And you can make, you know, the bigger your company is getting, the more people you have employed, the more decisions you're making, everything is on your shoulders. And that's very, very hard, because as a person, which is wired to make a certain amount of decisions every day. You make decisions on what you're going to eat, what you're going to wear. And then on top of that, you have to make decisions on your company now, tomorrow, in the future, and then every single thing that comes in. So suddenly you're up to 200 decisions every day. And that can end up with a lot of founders getting what's called decision fatigue. And that can be dangerous, and that's why you need to take a break once in a while. And I think a lot of company founders learn this in the hard way.
It's really another way, kind of, you had to raise a different kind of COVID baby, I would say, over the past 1.5 years. Yeah, I can imagine that it was very, very tough. Then this is the end of our talk today. We would like to thank you, Anne, for taking your time out of your very busy schedule to talk to us. Yeah, we truly appreciated talking to you about Industry 4.0, new technologies, and you as a person, as an entrepreneur, and your walk of life. Yeah, we are beyond excited to present this episode to our listeners and that are now able to learn more about Industry 4.0, Internet of Things, and you as a person. Yeah, when listening to this episode. Lastly, maybe another question. Are there any last words you would like to get off your chest? Maybe something you would like to promote or shout out, something that you have coming up?
I think just, you know, anybody who wants to do something like this, just, you know, try it out. There is no recipe for success. So see where it takes you. If you don't like it, you don't like it. If you fail, you fail. You can always try again. As long as you're, you know, playing it safe, not endangering anybody, just you know, go out and have fun with it, but remember as well to take care of your health and make sure you take breaks so you don't end up ruining your own mind and possibly your business as well.
Lastly, we would like to thank our viewers for listening and showing interest in this episode. We hope today's podcast has made you more curious, and we hope you join in on our next one. In the meantime, be sure to check out all of the other episodes.